6. It's 6 minutes past 6 on Timeless Hits 4FM.
McGurk on 4.
And thank you, Bernie Jameson, in our newsroom there. It's Eamon Keane here, standing in for Tom McGurk on 4FM. Well, it's cold, but you're going to have some hot debate now, because sitting across from me, Solicitor Gerald Keane and Veronica Walsh, cognitive behavioural therapist, tweeter and founder of the Dublin Current Affairs Meetup Group. Veronica, you're into give myself and Mr. Keane some CBT therapy, are you?
Am I? Is that okay?
Yeah. Let's do a live therapy session. How are you feeling, Gerald? Okay. How are you feeling, Gerald? Can I ask you this about a country where, and I have to say this, I thought John Gormley got unfairly hammered over his comments when he was asked by Pat Rabbit in the Dáil this week. About Pat Rabbit said, aren't you in a straitjacket? Let's have a listen to what John Gormley had to say in response to that, because it caused an awful lot of controversy, quite a bit of debate. Let's have a listen.
When you enter government during this crisis, you are entering an asylum, believe you me. And you will have to endure. You will have to endure the sleepless nights. You will have to endure the no-win situation. You will have to endure the non-stop criticism.
All right. I suppose, Gerald Keane, the point I'm making is this, is that I do believe whoever goes in is going to have very, very limited choices. And in that sense, it is a straitjacket. And when I see how the Dáil is run and how government is run, whoever's in, I don't think the asylum analogy is too far out, and despite complaints from liberty groups about the use of that word. Gerald?
Yeah, no, I agree with Eamon. I mean, he said he's having sleepless nights. There's a lot of people in Ireland who are not in politics having sleepless nights, I can tell you. There's no doubt what he says is true to a certain extent, because the difficulty is, and I can only go, and I learn from talking to people. I know a client of mine who was a minister in the government, and he went in with great intentions. And the first day he went in, he was given his schedule for the day, and it went from meeting community group in North County Dublin to opening an extension to a school, to attending a lunch. And basically his whole day was been planned out for him. He didn't have a chance, in my opinion. He was succumbed into this system that's inherent in our political structure, which is wrong. Mm-hmm. A minister, you know, going in to run the country should have no distractions. He should be allowed, and I don't have a problem, I spoke out about this. I don't have, if a minister does his job properly, I have no problem with having a driver in a car, unlike other people. I know Vincent Brown and Fintan O'Toole keep going on about this. If he's doing his job, or she's doing his job properly. Now, I would have thought Minister for Education, the first thing they should do is hop in the car and head off for 2 or 3 days, if they haven't done it already, and to talk to teachers, or if it's Minister of Health, talk to nurses and young doctors and go around and learn what's happening on the ground, because that's what it's all about. And not be sitting in this ivory tower being dictated to by, you know, public senior civil servants who seem to be controlling their days and their lives. And I think that's really the problem I have.
Yeah, isn't Gerald right, Veronica?
Well, he is, you know, and John Gormley seems like a very nice man. And, you know, he's passionate about his beliefs and he's a Green. And he went in with his Green ideology, and it's our misfortune that that was his focus, you know, because these are unprecedented times and this is about other than the stag hunting and whatever. And I like him. I felt his emotion. I think he meant that day. But at the same time, he's being disingenuous, saying he had no choices and they're going to learn. He said that the EU and the IMF insisted on the minimum wage cut, and that's been denied. You know, he was saying we had no choice about that. That's only 2 days ago.
And who's denying it?
The Department of Finance made a statement and said that's not true.
Who told John Gormley they insisted on it? Because
this is what I think is the key.
Who? Yeah. Because someone somewhere, I'd never be Fianna Fáil, would it? No, giving him a wrong briefing.
Well, you know, and in fact, it may have been insisted on. And Fianna Fáil maybe saying, no, it wasn't, because they don't want to look like they were dictated to. Who knows? But I mean, this is ridiculous.
But hang on, let me put this point to Veronica. That everybody, Fine Gael and Labour, saying to different degrees, we'd renegotiate it. But whatever anybody does, if you go back to the EU and the IMF and say, right, listen, I tell you what, now we don't want a 5.8% interest rate, we wanted 5% or 4.5%. Mm-hmm. They'll say, grand, okay, but you'll have to have more cuts or increased taxes to make up for the money. There is no free lunch in town.
Well, it's about what's workable. There are so many smart people saying this is a fantasy. It's simply unworkable. We're banjaxed. We will never get recovery. Now, you know, so if this is about the Eurozone and Portugal and Spain, and if it's about the markets, it's a joke. if it's unworkable, it's unworkable. Like, can we say the emperor has no clothes?
I can't. Because I think, Gerald, it's a point Veronica raises, a valid point. And I've been saying this all week, I'm probably boring people to death. I promise I won't say it too often more. Whatever about the deal that's been done, and I don't think it's great for people here to say, and easy to say, go back and renegotiate, there is no free lunch. However, the huge train coming down the tracks is this. Spain and Portugal, when you look at the state of Spain's regional banks and their regional authorities, when you look at the state of Portugal's finances, they are in serious jeopardy. And when that mess comes into town, the European Stability Fund, which would be used to help countries, that's only got 440 billion. That'll be wiped out. And the only people then who can save the day are the Germans. So it boils down to this. It's not about whether we're unhappy with a 5.8% rate or not. It's about this. Germany will decide whether to back the euro or not. And that's what we need to be looking at and preparing for.
Yeah, you've 100% correct. And I mean, and that is, you've said it, I know, before, and I've heard it this week. You're absolutely 100% correct. I mean, I think what gets to me a little bit is, you know, there's political football's been played here. I mean, I was upset, I must say now, with Joan Burton turning around and saying, you know, the country's banjaxed. Having done the deal, there is nothing in the deal that will help the country when it comes to growth. Well, I mean, I know there was I've been told this, there was a lot of discussion and argument to try and keep our corporation rate tax at what it was. And I mean, it was kept at, 12.5%, which will help growth into the future. So I think we've got to be very careful in this country. I think that the problem I have is that it's either everybody's against it or everybody's for it. There is a middle ground. There are some parts of the deal that the corporation tax rate, I think, was important to encourage growth into the future. I don't accept that, you know, the deal is banjaxedly bad, if there's such a word, as she said. I think, unfortunately, we have no choice. It's too late now to go back. I was outspoken on your programme many times in the past. Nobody would ever convince me that we should have saved Anglo-Irish Bank. Nobody. Mm-hmm. I would have told the bondholders, good luck, get lost, you're out of town, you put your money in, you lost, you threw the dice and you failed. They made enough money over the years. And take the consequences of that. Yeah. I think with AIB and Bank of Ireland is a little bit different because they're more retail banks and they deal with the people and we need to keep those banks going. But Anglo-Irish Bank was a big mistake. Now we're left with that. And I know of no business woman or man who would enter into any guarantee on behalf of any third party without knowing the liability. Yeah. Without knowing the liability. And we didn't know it. I mean, the figures went, I mean, they're jumping every couple of months. And now we see what sort of mess we're in. So I think we have to accept now the situation we're in. Now we have to look at ways of going forward and trying to resurrect the situation. That's why, I mean, I listened with interest, the proposals of Fine Gael and Labour to enrich the budget. I think we now have to move forward. There's no point in looking back. But I was certainly very outspoken and always will be about saving Anglo-Irish Bank because regardless of the amount of files they have in there, they had 26 customers. That's what they had. They're 26 of them.
Well, they weren't a bank. They were never a bank.
Will we ever know who the customers were?
Pardon?
Will we ever know who the customers were?
No, we know the 26 of them. You just pick up the paper. I mean, you know the 26 of them. There's 26 customers. I mean, you could name them. I mean, we know them all at this stage.
It's the investors that we need to know.
Yeah, it's the people that are listening to this programme on the street that are now foot with that bill and our children and your children and my children.
Because something that struck me during the week was some of the intelligentsia are making this point that, look, damn it, Germany needs to take some of the burden of what happened. They gave us that money. And it, do you know what it reminds me of? It's like, you know, someone goes into the... Well, you could argue in the States they do it, but someone goes into a bar here and they have more than they should have and then they sue the bartender. We're not children. We're adults, right?
Yeah.
And Veronica, you do cognitive behavioural therapy, all right? Mm-hmm. And if you were doing some CBT now on our lads here, and if someone came into you and said, Veronica, I have a huge problem... I'm a loan junkie. I keep borrowing and I don't know what to do. And sure, God, things are awful. And sure, the fellas told me lies and everything. And the fellows who gave me the loans, the Germans, they should pay some of the debts I run up, shouldn't they? What would you say to them?
Well, you know, in CBT, we're always looking for the evidence and what's rational and what's irrational. You know, the essence of it is human beings create their own upsetness. The same thing can happen. All of us here at this table, we'll all have a different reaction because of the way we process it. So if I'm looking for the evidence on this, if they say to me, yeah, this fella came in and did a stress test on all my banks and said they were great a few months ago, I'd say, well, then they're bearing culpability.
Yeah.
You know, bring them in. Then they are.
Yeah.
They are. So this, that
did but if they did, for instance, the most recent EU stress test came after the bulk of the money was given out. Okay, that I did the last stress test that I read.
Sure.
And when we went to the Germans at the height in 2005, 2006, and 2007, the deal is there. You talk about evidence. The contract says, we give you this money. Mm. You know, if you don't pay, we come after you. We're giving it to you at this rate. There you go. And we signed, you signed, because this is the thing about senior bondholders. I have no graph for them, let me say that. And
well,
I actually think they should take something.
Before you get to that argument, we need to go before there, because these senior bondholders, you know, this idea no bank will fall with the euro. Merkel a few weeks ago has decided, well, they will, but only after 2013 and after the Irish and this is all about Spain. Hello? No, not acceptable. This is about the senior bondholders. This is not sovereign debt. It's private debt. And we were lied to by the banks. There was avarice. There was fraud. There were books cooked.
But
now, can we not address that? Do we have to say, oh, no, we cannot dishonor this debt? It's not my debt.
This is where I would have been in the solicitor here, Gerald. I want to put this point to you, Gerald. Yes. Gerald, just 2 seconds. I'll make this point to you, right? Ronnie making the point there that it's in other words, it's kind of renegotiable given what's happened. But here's the deal, though. Rather, because I think actually it's infantile to blame the Germans, and I'll tell you why. Our government, who we elected, and we don't like it, and I think it was a disgrace what they did in terms of that guarantee, but they did do it. They did do it. And the minute they did that, they socialised the debt, and like it or not, we are liable. You can't rewrite the rules now because we had a bunch of incompetent people leading the country. Gerald?
Yeah, you're right. And I just would like to remind you at this stage, Eamon, that and Veronica, there was actually a case, and you touched on an interesting point. There was a case in the High Court in Dublin not long ago where a well-known businessman went into the High Court when he and his family and or companies lost a lot of money, which had been lent to them by National Irish Bank and one or two other banks. And the argument was, they gave me the money too easily.
Yeah.
They gave me the money. Mm. I didn't know. Like, they kept giving me money and I got involved in currency exchange investments and I lost heavily. And I shouldn't be asked to repay that money because they gave me more money than I even wanted. And that was thrown out. I mean, that's not a defence. I mean, I think the court took the view of, you know, look, you're a businessman, you're grown up.
Yeah.
You took the money, you owe it, and that's it. That's the first point I'd say. I hope you don't mind me diversifying for a second, just because one point I also want to make about when you mentioned James Gormley and the Green Party, one thing I always feel, and I always try and take practical examples, I find extraordinary with the Green Party in power, and if there's anybody listening to the Green Party, I'd like them maybe to get in touch with the station and talk to you and find out how a company that I know of, Country Crest, who spent a large sum of money in a wind turbine, for example, which can save jobs, it can provide electricity in the area at considerably lower cost, and opened by the Green Ministers, opened by, you know, they were very happy to come along and get photographs. And a year and a half later, we can't get connected. That turbine can't get connected to the ESB National Grid.
Why?
Unions. The Minister has no control. I mean, if I was Minister...
Isn't that an indictment, Gerald and Veronica, of what we're talking about? And I made this point earlier with James Riley of Fine Gael, who said, we're going to come in now in our government and we're going to reform the civil service and we're going to take things on and it's going to be all different.
Yeah.
And I hope I wasn't overly cynical, but I said, if you ever watch Yes Minister, it ain't that easy.
No. 100% correct.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, Texter says it must be really tough. Anthony in Rackarn, Dublin, says it must be really tough for the Gormley to earn 20,000 a month and to put up with all the pressure of never having to make a decision. Anthony's point is the Greens stayed in power long enough to max their salaries and pensions and they are fooling no one demanding an election now. They're as rotten as Fianna Fáil, he says. Mick Moriarty, the Baldy barber down there in Cork, says will they ever drop the 13.5% VAT on haircuts? Another caller says Gilmore must have an awful lot of money if he's not going to do what the IMF say, because we're not going to get 400 million euro a week anywhere else. Another texter says, in relation to Garth Fitzgerald, why didn't he clock the bat across the water when she said out, out, out? That was in reference to Margaret Thatcher. We're going to stay with this discussion. More coming up after.
Minus 6 degrees. Now you're up to date on Timeless Hits 4FM.
And you're very welcome back to 4FM with me, Eamon Keane, standing in for Tom McGurk. Our text number is 53544 and the texts are flying in. Jim in Cork says, we need a clear out of the Fianna Fáil stooges who run the public service and semi-states. Remember, he says, PJ's comments, PJ Myers' comments, it is our civil service. Another texter says, if they drop the VAT, I could employ one person for 3 days and give them 12,000 a year. I would like to know how other people feel about that. It's killing business. Gerald Keane is in studio with me, solicitor, and I'm also joined by Veronica Walsh, a cognitive behavioural therapist, tweeter, and founder of the Dublin Current Affairs Meetup Group. Gerald Keane, two interesting things there. One complaint about the claim that Fianna Fáil stooges run the public service, and the other from a businessman who says, I could employ more people if they cut VAT.
Yeah, I mean, I think two things I'd say. First of all, in relation to the civil service being run by Fianna Fáil, I think the civil service run all political parties. I think whoever comes in power the next time, and it looks like a Fine Gael Labour coalition, the civil service will run them, make no mistake about that. That's the problem we're faced with. You see, we've lost priorities here. The priorities, first of all, I think if you, and I know this is not a political speech, but if you get the basics right, that is the elderly, the sick, and then move to the frontline workers, and make sure if you look after those, then you have to make the cuts and you have to make the savings to protect those, and people will be on your side. So if you take on the units, for example, you can have austere measures of cost cutting, but you can also have growth incentives. I mean, I think the VAT point is very good. I've argued you should abolish, but we're a wonderful country for B&B, hotels, restaurants, bars, bringing tourists into the country. So help those industries first. If you then help taxi drivers, this will all create employment. So the reduction in VAT on those services can be made up by saving on 44 cents in every euro in administration and health. Get rid of pen-pushing bureaucrats. They're as much to blame as bankers and politicians, because it's a cost and it's a serious cost in the state. But don't ever, and I said it before, don't ever have a debate between the public service sector and the private service. It's within the public service. Protect the frontline workers, guards, nurses, prison officers, etc. But above that are layers and layers of management that is just not acceptable. And in addition to that, if you take something like the McCarthy report in relation to quangos, in my day when I was growing up, a lot of the regulatory responsibilities for aspects of Irish life are run by the civil service and the department. This Fianna Fáil government and previous governments got involved in creating these quangos, absolute total waste of money. Bring it back into the civil service with expert help coming in from the outside, whether it's young.
All right, Veronica, what to make of that idea?
I'm unusually with Gerald there on all of that. But, you know, it is the permanent government, the faceless Sir Humphreys that are always there. That worries me, you know. And Fine Gael said today as part of the manifesto they'd be addressing that and putting other people in. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. Whether they can do that. I mean, the power of these people, the senior civil servants that we don't know the names of. Brian Lenihan was asked last week by another Drive Time presenter, who's negotiating for us? Yeah. Can we ask you who? Oh, our top people in the Department of Finance. And you're like, well, that's okay then. Not, you know, they put us in this position.
What do you think? Let's look at what Cameron's done in England, Veronica. Did you agree with that? Like, he's streamlining everything, giving the contracts out more to the private sector, getting more community involvement, this whole community ethos that he's pushing. Isn't he right in that?
No.
Why not?
No, you get me blood boiling there. Is this, are we going big society here and shrinking?
Oh, I'm talking about Ireland in a way, because it's quite simple.
Yeah.
If we can't afford to pay for things, it'll be down to voluntary groups, community groups. Fine Gael may get in and decide to sell off certain state assets and so forth. So it's a scenario. So what do you think about that?
I am unhappy about that, and I think the big society is being forced on us through Stealth anyway, which is less government services and it being taken over by volunteerism and the community. And we can see that right now with teachers and special needs assistants. Do it or you're not getting your dole. Right?
And they're bringing in people from FOR schemes who won't be paid but who'll do the teacher's job. But these are graduates who might want experience, so, you know, is that a bad thing?
But they don't get a choice, do they? Now, and if you're working and working and working away and you want motivation, you kind of want to be paid and you have to survive.
But I know in media, people come in, I did it, you go in and you work a while for nothing because you just want to get a foot in the ladder.
Choice. If you're not given a choice, if you're told you cannot survive or eat, actually, if you don't do it, that's the big society by Stealth. It scares me. I don't like it.
Gerald?
Well, I don't agree with Veronica, because I think anybody that says that Cameron's proposals, I don't like them. It's an extraordinary general reaction to a lot of very good and positive things in his proposals. There are some aspects of his proposals that I wouldn't agree with, but there are some excellent. I mean, streamlining the entire senior public service pen-pushing bureaucrats is absolutely wonderful, and we should learn from it and do it immediately. He took them on and he's going to take them on, and he's basically calling in these people who are getting fat salaries, fat pensions. And then we should all be grateful because they can, you know, they'll give us 30 minutes or, you know, off to cash a cheque rather than where in the public,
where in
the private sector.
I'm with you on that.
So you can't turn around and say that these proposals, you know, are, you know, they get your blood boiling. Because
that's not where I was going with that.
Yeah, a lot of them are very, very good.
You specifically said about the volunteerism and community and streamlining that way, not the top layers of the service.
Oh, yeah. No,
because, I'm with you there.
Yeah, because the problem here is that the people out there who are struggling to make a living, who are listening to this programme, have no idea the waste that's going on. And if they knew, I think they would be serious.
But what about the people out there listening to us? And to come back to this point, we've had that proposal mooted whereby graduate teachers who can't get jobs on FOS schemes then would work and they can keep their dole money if they do their teaching. And Veronica's saying, look, you're not giving people a real choice there. What's your view on that, Gerald?
Well, I think, first of all, special needs teachers and teachers are frontline workers that are badly needed. And that's the first thing I would say. And you know, it's not a blanket praise for them. I mean, I'm not happy with their paid sick leave that's carried over for years. I'm not happy with the fact that they seem to have parent-teacher meetings on 12 o'clock on a business day and all this. There's a lot of criticism there that can be tidied up. But the point I'm making about choice is that if the teachers are needed, then there is enough money. There is actually enough money there if we get the wastage out of the system to finance them. If there is no jobs for them, then there's a number of reasons. Either there's no money for them, which I think there should be, if the whole system is streamlined properly. And if the system is streamlined properly and there's no jobs for them, then they're faced with the unfortunate situation of immigration, which always saddens me when we have a wonderful country, number one. And number two is that if they're, you know, people often say to me, what about these massive people who are going to become unemployed? What do you do? Well, if you think constructively about getting them back in to the system of working with suggestions like, for example, I've said it before, anybody that takes on somebody off the live register and doesn't leave anybody that's working for them unemployed for a year, then people they take off the employment register, the social welfare should go to that employer.
But just here's the key question. I'll sum it down to this for both of you. If a person is on social welfare, should they be obliged, should it be mandatory for them to take up a project or a work offer that's made? Well, and then if they don't, they lose their money. What do you think?
Well, the answer to that is, no, I don't think they should be mandatory. But the problem there is that our social welfare payments for the unemployed are considerably high. We don't ever want a situation that existed in the Labour government in Britain back in the 70s, where it actually paid to be out of work. You got your social
welfare.
Are you
saying our payments are too high?
And the payments are too high in comparison to the social welfare payments in Northern Ireland.
All right, Veronica,
and I believe
that.
How is cutting the minimum wage going to help that poverty trap of the wages, the toll being too high? It's subsistence, which means it helps you to survive. There's nobody holidaying in the Bahamas on €196 a week, and the hoops of fire they have to jump through to try and get a little bit of
money. So, Gerald Keane, is it the case that, you know, because you live a more opulent lifestyle, you don't know what it's like for people on that ground? It's easy for you to say, well, it's too high.
Oh, no. What I'm saying, it's too high when you're across the border in Northern Ireland, it's a fraction of what it's paid. First of all, unfortunately, I don't live an opulent lifestyle anymore. I'm lucky enough in that I'm dealing with people every day, both during the day and at night time during the week who are unemployed. In fact, in many cases, I and others are trying to assist and help the situation. It's not a question of, I don't want to sound wrong. I mean, of course, in some cases, social welfare payments are not too high. But if you've got a situation where they can get off the dole and get working, it's important that we were talking about society earlier. And the most depressing aspect, I think, of society is to have people unemployed. So we've got to concentrate also on trying to get these people back to work. Yeah. I don't want a situation where the unemployment assistance is so high and the travel and medical and all this.
Yeah, but sorry, I must put in there.
Then it doesn't make it worth their while to go back to work.
Yeah, let me put in a tiny bit, though. Yeah, that's all great in theory, but you're stopping the creation of jobs when you've slashed school budgets and told them, hire these teachers at 9 months a year. Oh, and by coincidence, 3 months is off, right? And they've no budgets anyway. So they're left in a position where this is how it is for them then. So then you aren't creating jobs for teachers. You've got people who are just surviving. And you know, depression, hello, anxiety. Yeah, this is not a good idea.
Veronica, if you start at the basic problem, then you won't have as much difficulty in understanding social welfare and unemployment. The basic problem is the massive waste that occurs in this country and that has been promoted by this government and was extraordinary during the Celtic Tiger. If you minimise that waste and help people on the front line, then you will help people who deserve jobs, who have no chance of getting jobs and who depend on social welfare. They've no chance of getting back into the workplace because there's no opportunities.
Well, so they're caught in poverty traps as well.
Well, sorry, I
just want to let Veronica in here.
Sorry, yeah.
No, they're caught in poverty traps. If you're getting your 196 quid a week, right, and then they generously give you 540, which is what it is, right, for your rental allowance, right? So you're in a bedsit with a one-bar electric fire, right? Grant, you have a medical card, right? You've got your rental allowance. And then they're saying, we want you back in the workplace. It's better for your respect, you know, and it's better for the country. So you go, okay. Then they take a euro off the minimum wage and say, it's only a euro. It's not only a euro. Multiply that by 8 per day, right? By the way, because you're working, we're taking away your medical card now. We're taking away whatever. Survival, the numbers don't add up. You're trapping people in poverty traps. You're not giving them choice. You're not giving them respect or dignity. You're screwing the poor and vulnerable. And when you look at the minimum wage, it's the ancillary costs around it for SMEs and businesses. It's the upward only rents. It's the PRSIs.
But I have spoken to Veronica to restaurant owners who make the point about the ancillary costs, but they also say, you know, I bring someone in at the weekend, I'm paying two or three times.
I know, Jay Burke loves that stuff. Yeah, I don't think he's ever been cold a day either. And I think that's
an unfair comment on Jay. I think if you know, if someone takes a risk and tries to get a business going, I think that takes guts. Yeah. And my point is this, is that it is a reality. For someone who tries to run a business, minimum wage, particularly at weekends, does screw some restaurants. There's a reality, there's an economic reality we're in now that doesn't let us do that.
No, I'm cool with you. I do disagree. I mean, we're in a different world and we work 7 days a week. So this idea of double time on a Sunday and whatever, to me, is crazy. But that's not particularly the minimum wage. Yeah. You know?
Okay, some texts coming in. A lad I know is getting 196 a week living at home. He hands up 50 euro to his mum. He saves 100 a week and went and did go to Lanzarote for his holidays. In other words, he's saying that this person is doing okay, Veronica.
Well, I think to be fair, I think I know where Veronica's coming from. I wouldn't suggest one moment that, you know, that people should ever be left in a situation where they're on the poverty line. I mean, I know that's a generic term. What I don't want happening is, I'm not talking about families with children. They need to be helped through these difficult times more than anybody. I'm talking about a situation which I'm concerned about, that the social welfare or the benefits to single young men or whatever who might have the opportunity to go back into the workplace, that they just decide not to go back in because it's easy living the way it is. Now, the vast majority of people are not like that. They do want to get back in. And the dignity of the situation means that we've got to encourage people back into the workplace, but not in the sort of environment that's been created in the Celtic Tiger. I'm talking about the indigenous industries of Ireland in the small to medium term businesses. And we also need to help those. If you help, as I said, the restaurants, and you help taxi drivers, you help men and women who have shops and who are struggling, they will give employment if the government would help them.
Listen,
we
a simple
need to
way
help
to
them.
Do it is, if you said to someone, go for the minimum wage, either the one we have that Labour will restore and even Fine Gael, and allow them to keep their medical card, their rental allowance or whatever, at least for the first year. Great. We're getting them back in. We're keeping dignity. It's about survival. Mm. You know, that's quite simple.
All right. Something that one of you mentioned there. Listen to us here on 4FM with me, Eamon Keane. Our text number is 53544. My guest solicitor, Gerald Keane. And we have tweeter and founder of the Dublin Current Affairs Meetup Group. That's Veronica Walsh. Interesting story in today's Examiner that they're saying the next generation are voting with their feet, with one in three aged between 18 and 24 planning to emigrate in the next 12 months. And I want to just tie this in with something I was discussing earlier after the interview with Gareth Fitzgerald and we had a cup of tea. And we kind of both agreed in this thing. Veronica, again, as my therapist, tell me this. In Ireland, do you think, I call it tragedy porn, are we addicted to doom and gloom? That it's kind of self-perpetuating, that people feel there is no hope, there is no future, I better scoot off. Instead of someone grasping something and giving people some hope, are we addicted? Is that in our psyche that we actually like tragedy?
I would disagree. And my whole work is to stop people feeling hopeless. You know what I mean? To see that they can process things in a different way, and there's still joy, the sun rising, their kids laughing, you know, things are there to challenge us, but we can handle them in a different way. I think the mass exodus is not just helplessness, and we do feel helpless. Yeah. I mean, what are we to do? Hopelessness. We're screwed for a decade if this thing goes through. But it's disgust as well. It's disgust and disrespect at the establishment, you know. So that's not quite the idea.
But don't you say sometimes, though, isn't the danger what you're saying? Let's take the therapist-patient analogy. Isn't it a bit like the patient who comes back is weak And the therapist buys into their helplessness and says, yeah, it's terrible. You just said there, for instance, well, we're banjacks for 10 years. Aren't you doing the same thing, Veronica? You're telling people we're banjacks for 10 years and saying, actually, we may not be banjacks for 10 years.
Well,
right,
no,
now it's not looking great.
I qualified that. I said, we're banjacks for 10 years if we go through with this thing. I always have hope, you know, when I'm active and I'm activist. But I also believe that this is all moot. Because it's about Portugal, it's about Spain. You know, things are going to change. So our deal may fall over. There could be European bonds.
But come back.
There could be all sorts of solutions in the next few months that will but just...
But Gerald, let me talk to Gerald King. Come back to this again, right? People feel stripped of power. They do feel a certain degree of helplessness. They feel...